The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We are back, and the final 2 hours are live. We've had a busy opening stanza here, and we appreciate all of you dropping by. More to come. We'll update you on the SEC basketball tournament, which is just around the corner tonight at Bridgestone Arena, and we will continue more with your phone calls as well. The headline of this afternoon is similar to the one of yesterday when Les Miles was pushed out at Kansas. Today, the man who defended the hire and who made the hire 2 years ago is out as well. More on the situation with Jeff Long's firing a little bit later on when we check in with Chris Lowe. Pat Bradley joining us as well from the SEC Network to help us get ready for the next couple of days. First of all, Pat, it's great to see you. And it's that time of the year when we're normally all huddled together getting ready for 4 days of basketball. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to see you, even on a monitor, which every day that's the way I see you. But it's great talking to you. I can guarantee you there's nobody that you're going to talk to today as happy as I am that SEC tournament is here.
Well, I want to just dispense with the tournament for a minute. We all know your background and where you played and where you have made a living. And I still can't get over, Pat, knowing a little bit about the tradition of Arkansas, but the enthusiasm of that fan base is out of sight.
It is, and they're hungry. Right. That's the word that I've been using. They're hungry. They got a Eric Musselman's hungry. The players that he brought in are hungry. And the fan base has been waiting for it. It's hard to imagine. It's been since 96, going 25 years since the Hogs got to the Sweet 16, 23 years since they hosted a top 25 matchup in Bud Walton Arena. And we know the history of what's been happening up and downs. Mike Anderson was right there putting us over the edge. So it feels good that we have a team that we can now say, oh, look out, we can make a run here in the NCAA tournament. So it's great to be in that situation as a Hog fan.
And Pat, it just seems like it's happened quickly. I know that's not easy because, I mean, there was a decent foundation there, but how has Eric Musselman turned that corner so well?
Well, he is an extreme taskmaster in a good way. And what I think he was able to do quickly was identify the kind of players that are going to respond to his coaching. And he brought in, and also timing is important because he had a heck of a freshman class from the state of Arkansas that he was able to recruit, Moses Moody being one of them, Devontae Davis, Jalen Williams. These are Arkansas kids that he recruited. So really good class. And the second thing was he did a heck of a job, again, identifying grad transfers that he knew he could coach to what he wanted to do. Justin Smith and Jalen Tate have been out of this world. So I think it's that combination. His personality is nonstop energy, and that's exactly what the team needed in this strange year, Paul, is a guy that was like him, his personality, that was not going to accept any excuses, and you see the result of it.
Talking to Pat Bradley, who was quite a player himself out there, Pat, at this point, as we get ready for tonight's game, you know, people are not as focused on Arkansas and Alabama, but looking for a horse to ride all the way through. If we moved Arkansas and Alabama to the side, who is the most likely to make a serious run in this tournament?
Well, I've got my eye on Florida because they have an incredible balance inside, outside. Colin Castleton, we weren't sure what we were going to get from him as a transfer. He's been phenomenal. Trey Mann is the most improved player in the SEC. He's taken over this team. And not to mention that they had planned, Mike White planned everything around Keontae Johnson, who they don't have. And quietly, they have put together a season where now they're playing more consistently. And I think that's why I'm so intrigued by Florida, is because it's somewhat of a question mark. Trey Mann didn't play against Tennessee, and they had the lead in that game on Sunday for the majority of the way. So They have the size in Castleton, the energy in Anthony DiRugi, the shooting with Noah Locke, and you've got the man, a guy that is a go-to guy in Trey Mann. I love it, and they defend. They're athletic. They're quick from the guard position. So outside of you know, Florida, and of course with LSU, I'm going to ride with Florida if you don't go with the two teams who are playing the best right now, and that's Arkansas and Alabama.
Well, and often we do see the two best make a run. So let me throw one or two names at you, then we'll come back to the rest of the tournament. I had a call from a Kentucky fan earlier wanting to know if I thought Kentucky could win the national championship. Oh. I mean, I laugh, but that's the enthusiasm of Kentucky fans. Yeah. I mean, it's March, and they're forgetting what's happened in the previous 4 months. What are their chances of doing anything in Nashville?
Okay, here's the situation, the reality, Kentucky fans. I know BBN comes strong. Not this year, though, because I don't think they can all get in the building. The challenge with Kentucky is this. They've got to play great 4 days in a row, okay? 4 days in a row. We haven't seen them play great for really two or three games in a row during the regular season, so it's asking a lot. When they're at their best, they're making threes. Consider this, Paul. At the beginning of the year, they were making, on average, 5 threes per game. Fast forward now, over 8 threes per game. They've had games where they made 13 threes. So they're shooting more threes. They're making more. If they don't make shots, then they really don't have a chance of winning this tournament. Probably a chance to get into the championship game, because they don't have the one guy that can break you down. They don't have a Trey Mann, Moses Moody, Javonte Smart, even a Cam Thomas that can get to the rim. So they've got to, Mintz has got to make shots. B.J. Boston's got to make outside shots. And then if they can get on the glass, they can put it together. But the good news is, Kentucky fans, if you get hot one weekend, you don't got to be hot for three weeks. Just one weekend, you get hot, and you can ride it all the way to the championship.
Speaking of the championship, Alabama won the regular season, and you've already alluded to their possibility this weekend. Let's talk for a moment about Nate Oates. Second year, like Musselman, what else? What else can we say that hasn't already been said? But I'm listening for your thoughts.
Well, the first thing I'll say is those two guys, think of two different backgrounds to where they have now converged, the top in the league. A couple years ago, Nate Oates is coaching high school basketball. A couple years ago, Eric Musselman's coaching professional basketball. Now they're both 1-2 in the SEC. I love it. It's such an interesting story how they both got here. With Nate Oates, though, he is so committed to his offensive strategy. I love it. Every time I talk to him, I learn more about the game of basketball. And I think when they've struggled this year, it has been, believe it or not, their offense, because I trust the defense. They have athleticism, they have quickness in the guard position, and their size is athletic size. You know, they've got 6'8", 6'8", 6'7", who can go and get defensive rebounds. They're quick to the ball. Offensively, when they struggle, they take contested shots. And I'm talking contested layups. So Nate Oates was talking how at one point during the season they had shot 45% on layups. That's not good. He wants 60%. So it's important for them to get rolling. Turn down a bad, even if it's a layup, don't challenge a big guy. Turn that down. Kick it out like Nate Oates' offense. Penetrate, get to the paint, kick, penetrate, kick. If you got an open layup, take it. So Paul, really though, he believes in it. He's coached his guys to believe in it, and they're committed to it. And now they got some swagger. This is a fun team, but they're really skilled to be able to play that style of basketball too.
And finally, I want to ask you about Tennessee. Rick Barnes dropped by yesterday. This team has been an enigma. They were the favorite early on, and they have literally had everything said about them you can say. What do you say about them as we wrap up?
Boy, isn't it amazing if you and I could bottle confidence and then just pass it out to guys? But we'd be billionaires, Paul. We'd be doing this for fun, not just the money. And I think that's a challenge with Rick Barnes, is we've seen his guys be able to put it together, right, from an offensive standpoint. And that's been the challenge, is how to keep them consistent, their mind right, an attacking, aggressive mode. And Rick Barnes' offense, they score three ways. You have your traditional five guys moving, ball movement, player movement, good screens, curls, set plays. Then you have what he's trying to do this year is get Fulkerson and Pons on the block or the elbow and trying to get those guys to believe attack, attack. And then the last way they score is with Springer Johnson and Victor Bailey breaking the defense down. He's got to get Pons and Fulkerson back feeling like they can score on anybody every possession. And that's sometimes right here, Paul, is just getting their minds right. But this is an important weekend for Tennessee to figure that out in this tournament-style atmosphere, and hopefully that'll take it into the tournament, March Madness.
Sensational conversation with Pat Bradley as we get ready for tonight's beginning of the SEC tournament. Pat, we look forward to more conversations throughout March. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thanks, Paul. You're the man. Appreciate you.
You got it. The one and only Pat Bradley joining us, and we will take a short break here. We'll update you a little bit later on the latest from Kansas involving Jeff Long and Les Miles. They are both gone. More on the SEC tournament, which starts in under 2 hours from Nashville, and we're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And getting you ready for tonight's SEC basketball tournament, SEC Now, at 6:30 and 9:30 tonight. Now let's get back to the calls, and Bob is up next in New York. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul. Hope all is well.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to the men's basketball tournament this year, as I'm sure everyone is. I have a very good vibe about Tennessee. I think they're really going to do something. Excellent coach, Coach Barnes there. It was very apropos that Pat Bradley was just on, but I think they're going to do something instead of Missouri and Arkansas. And I think maybe that 12th versus 15th situation, and I think that some magic may happen. What do you think?
Well, they're certainly capable of it, and you know, when you've been on the Ferris wheel like them all year, there's no reason why they can't get hot. But I mean, Billis was here yesterday, and he specifically pointed them out as a team that is capable of anything. So I mean, they have the talent to get there, and we saw Fulkerson on, I think it was Sunday against Florida, really get hot. He needs to be. Hey, thank you for the call, Bob. Appreciate your optimism. Let's check in with Ricky, who is, Bucky, who is up next in Kentucky. Hey, Bucky.
Hey, Paul. Man, it's an honor.
Thank you very much.
I got just a couple of questions for you. I just want to, from your perception, like, what two players you think besides Keon needs to step up big time for, like, a good run? And do you think, are you optimistic about any of our young studs coming back next year?
Yeah, I don't know, Bucky, on that question. I'm curious, and I know I hear some optimism coming from you, but I'm also a stickler for trying to understand where it's coming from. What have you seen this year during what's been close to a disaster for Kentucky that would give you reason to believe they can suddenly get it right, especially to win 4 days in a row?
Oh, no. I'm a ball fan, though.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. The answer is I can't come up with anything. I hate to be that short, but I just can't. Tim is up next in Louisiana. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you very much.
Okay, I guess the Title IX don't mean anything at LSU. But the young lady's claiming about the sexual transport. It doesn't mean anything. It just goes by the wayside. What do you think about that?
Well, Tim, I would say the record's pretty rough, and the one good news, if you could be positive, is what has come out of all of this, and change is happening as we speak, and change is clearly in the air, but you know what does it look like? Is it enough? And it's always the question when you have to go in and do a postmortem on anything, and it's a very bad look. And I have faith in the people that are currently there, not in the past, but currently, that they will rectify the problems. They have to. I mean, they're under a serious mandate to do that. Appreciate the call. I mean, I don't know if I heard you, and maybe we lost you at the end there. How about Phil in Dallas, Texas? Hey, Phil, go right ahead.
Hi, Paul. A couple of questions about two former SEC coaches. What are your expectations for Steve Sarkisian down in Austin? And what are your expectations for Brett Bielema at Illinois after taking over from the Lovie Smith train wreck? Can anybody be successful there?
I am pretty underwhelmed with the prospects at Illinois, and yeah, I think Bielema is a pretty solid football coach. He's a colorful character. I've always liked him personally, and I'm not sure exactly why he failed so badly at the end there. But he's been hanging around Belichick the last couple of years, so I think that's a good. A good time for him to reflect. In terms of, I'm trying to remember, what was the first part of the question?
How is Steve Sarkisian in Austin?
I believe Sarkisian will be good. I think he's a very smart football coach, another guy that fell off the train and now is back on it. And I think he's learned a lot in his years with Nick Saban. He's learned to be around a culture that accepts nothing but the best. And you know, my issue or my concern at Texas is the same I would have for any Texas coach since Darryl Royal. It's difficult to do your job with all the people that are trying to tug at you and influence you. And you know, Mack Brown was able to navigate it because he was a master politician. I'm not sure Sarkisian has those skills. So he's going to have to separate himself from the demands and be a football coach. And when we had him on about 2 months ago or a month ago, I was very impressed with his demeanor, and I think he needs to lean heavily on that to carry him through.
Okay. Can I ask you one more thing, Paul?
Of course, certainly.
How big of a hit will it be to the Alabama team not having Sarkisian be the offensive coordinator? He was innovative, and he seemed to have a very good relationship with Saban. How do you replace that?
Well, I think there's always a drop off when you lose someone who has been successful. But remember, he took over a program that we've seen countless people win titles in that position. From Brian Daboll did a really good job You've had other people like Lane Kiffin and McElwain going back really to the early days of Saban. And if it was anybody but Bill O'Brien, I might be concerned. But Bill O'Brien has such great experience as somebody who worked with Belichick again, as someone who was at Penn State as a head coach, who was at the Texans, even though it ended badly. He still has tremendous experience, and I think he is he's closer to Saban in age, and I think they will relate very well together.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. It was a great call. Let me check in with Randall in Dallas. Hey, Randall, thank you, and good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. How's your day going?
It's going great. Thank you for asking.
Good, good. Hey, I wanted to know what your thoughts were on A&M and the big guys that are getting in the trenches in their recruiting classes. It seemed like this year was an unprecedented year for the bigger recruits, you know, the offensive linemen, defensive linemen.
Yeah, I think Jimbo Fisher is doing what I think everyone expected him to do out there, and that's to start building a program from top down. And you can't win if you don't have linemen. And we saw the beginning of that the last 2 years. And I just think once the quarterback situation settles down during the spring, I believe the Aggies are going to be off and running. There may be a slight drop off this year, but when I say slight, I'm not talking about anything really perceptible. I'm talking about a razor thin drop off. I think they're going to be really good and positioned to challenge Alabama every year.
I believe what you're saying is true.
Well, that's why you hire someone like Jimbo Fisher, who understands not only coaching, and he's a great play caller, but building a program. And I think he's been sensational. We are going to head to the break. More on the firing today of Jeff Long, just within 36 hours of the firing of Les Miles at Kansas. We'll also talk about the first major of the golf season, even though it's not officially considered a major. And your phone calls as we continue here on a Wednesday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We welcome you back. It is great to have all of you here, and we will continue with more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. It's been a busy, busy afternoon here with so many guests as we are getting ready for the SEC basketball tournament an hour and a half from now in Nashville. Certainly today and tomorrow, so many commemorations of a year ago, as the COVID story on this particular Wednesday was starting to really become frightening. At this point on that Wednesday a year ago, the NCAA had just announced there would be no fans for the tournament a week off. And it was later in the evening that the SEC announced the same thing. It was also the night that Rudy Gobert became ill during a game. Tom Hanks and his wife, Rita Wilson, announced they had COVID, and by the next day, the entire world had literally come to a stop. So, back to the calls. I'm sorry. Okay, I wasn't sure. Let me bring in Michael Collins now. I thought we were about to hook up with him, and we have done that now. Michael, I don't know why I kept you waiting. I mean, with that shirt. I could see you from a couple of hundred miles away. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Man, let me just tell you, I love the way that you teased this golf segment saying
the first major of the year, even though a lot of people don't want to call it that. And look, man, I miss talking to you, so I had to bust out the pink William Murray, just because I know if I'm going to be talking to my boy Paul Feinbaum, I got to bring the heat. That's what I do.
Secretly, I really like it, and I'm ordering it online as we speak. Don't mind me. I want to ask you about this tournament because this is just such a fantastic event. I've had the pleasure of being there a few times, and it isn't a major, but describe how important this event is to the players.
But it is a major. I mean, think about it. It's got the biggest purse. We're playing for $15 million this week. The winner's getting $2.7 million. That's the biggest in golf. And it's the strongest field. We've got 48 of the top 50 golfers here. And one of the only reasons that the other two guys aren't here is they're hurt. Like Brooks Koepka pulled out because he's hurt. He's got a knee issue. So other than that, every single year this place has the strongest field in golf and has the biggest purse in golf. But the beauty of the Players' Championship here at TPC Sawgrass is the golf course. It doesn't suit one style of player. It doesn't fit one type of golfer. Like, when you look at the list of the guys that have won this golf tournament, you go from guys like Adam Scott back in the day when he was young and before he was using a long putter, when he was bombing it off the tee, and the very next year, Fred Funk won it, who couldn't hit it out of his shadow. So you got guys who are really short. You got guys who are really straight. You got guys who are crooked. There isn't one perfect style around this golf course, and that's exactly what you want for a tournament of this magnitude.
I want to ask you about a player I've been watching now for the last couple of weeks, and I mean, I see he's been in almost every tournament. He has not finished any of them well, but he, a couple of years ago, was arguably the best player in the game. What is going on with Jordan Spieth?
Well, I'll tell you this. Jordan Spieth is slowly but surely, it looks like he has turned the corner, and he's been playing some pretty solid golf. No, he hasn't necessarily been in contention on Sunday yet, but he's one of those guys right now that he looks like Rory McIlroy, where he can play three really good rounds, and he has one round that kind of throws him off. But look, last week at Arnold Palmer, Jordan Spieth going into Saturday looked spectacular, looked really, really good. And he started the day off, birdie hole in one, and then hit it in water and made a miraculous par save from outside 70 feet with that putter. Jordan Spieth's putter looks like it's back. And his putter and short game, if it's back, well, then Jordan Spieth is back. So I think, to your point about Jordan Spieth, yes, he was gone for a while, and he was in a very dark place. But I think he has gotten out of that dark place and is climbing back into the light to maybe see flashes of the old Jordan Spieth we saw before. But I'll tell you this, the guy who's going into that dark place scarily and is trying desperately not to fall into that dark pit is Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, for those who don't play golf, it doesn't take much to get in that dark pit, does it, Michael?
It is a razor-thin line that these guys are on from confidence to crash and burn. It's crazy how out here, I mean, think about the best guys in the world. Phil Mickelson now is outside of the top 50 for the first time ever. I mean, he might be outside the top 100. Ricky Fowler, the same thing, outside the top 50, and it looks like he's got 3 weeks to qualify for the Masters. Fowler might not go to the Masters, but that's golf. That's how it happens out here. I mean, there are guys on the Korn Ferry Tour right now that a kick off a tree into the fairway or a putt that looked like it was going to go out and hits a spike mark and goes in a hole, that's the difference between getting on the PGA Tour and making $4 million a week or being on the Korn Ferry Tour and making $40 a week. I mean, it is that razor thin of a line that these guys walk between being greatly confident and just falling off the earth.
Michael, let's talk about Tiger Woods for a second, because since the accident a couple of weeks ago, so much was said then and so little is being said now. What are you hearing?
Paul, that's Tiger's MO. I mean, he has never been one to been forthcoming with his injuries or the recovery time of those injuries. So We don't know very much whatsoever. The last thing we heard from Tiger Woods was at Arnold Palmer on Sunday when everyone was wearing red, and he tweeted out how much it meant to him seeing all the guys out there wearing red, knowing that they were supporting him. As far as his recovery and rehab are going, everyone is pretty much in the dark. The last statement that they made has been before was the week of the Arnold Palmer, and that was it. So I don't think anything has changed. There hasn't been any new news when it comes to Tiger Woods. I can tell you, even out here this week, he's still the talk of the driving range. There are still guys running around asking, have you heard from him? You've been texting him. What's he been saying to you? How's everything been going? So, you know, in that sense, Tiger's still the talk of the tour.
Yeah, and we both acknowledge that, you know, someone's medical history is their own and should be their own private business, but usually we know a little bit more. That's why I was curious, and I'm sure you're
especially
as curious as well.
Especially with sports figures, and it's Tiger Woods.
It is, and I know in a couple of weeks when we talk to you at Augusta, it's going to feel perhaps even stranger considering his history with that golf course. I want to stop for a second, though, and as we were coming into this, you may have heard me talk about a year ago this week when everything came to an end, and I want to go, because we talked to you a couple of times during COVID, and I know how difficult it was for you to be away and finally get back on tour. What are your memories of this week a year ago?
I keep thinking back to myself, and I've told him this in person, that when it comes down to it and history looks back at commissioners in sports, that Jay Monahan on the PGA Tour is going to be remembered as one of the greatest commissioners of sports because of what he had to do and go through and then juggle as far as redoing the whole schedule, not only for the PGA Tour, but don't forget, there were three majors that were played after this thing stopped. And when we were going through it, when everything went down, we were sitting out one night at a restaurant on that Wednesday night when everything started going down. But Commissioner Monahan on Monday said, we're moving forward. We're going to be fine. And then started having more press conferences. And we remember having a press conference when it was, okay, we're going to play on Friday, but there isn't going to be any spectators allowed. They weren't even going to let family members. And if you think about it, golf and NASCAR, those were the two major sports that shut down last. And then it was Thursday, late Thursday night, that the commissioner said, you know what, we're done. And we're not playing either. And it was so eerie on Friday to be back here at the golf course last year and up at the clubhouse and watching players going in and out of the clubhouse, getting their stuff and bringing it out to leave and asking international players, what are you going to do? And I talked to European Tour players that were saying, I can't go back to Europe right now because it's on lockdown. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to find a house to rent. I don't know how long I'm going to stay here. And there was such confusion between players and caddies and everybody that was involved in golf at that time, standing around kind of looking confused at one another because who knew what we were about to face and that we were going to be shut down for that long. But then you think about later on, the 13 weeks after we come back, and golf was one of the first sports to come back because it's that one thing that you can do and socially distance. And the fact that the commissioner has been able to play this much golf in this big stretch of time and travel all around the United States and not have any kind of huge breakout of COVID-19 on the PGA Tour says something about the protocol that the PGA Tour has put into place to keep the players and caddies safe as they travel all around. I think it's impressive, and I don't know that anyone believed that they were going to be able to get to this point without having some kind of big breakout of COVID-19 because of how much the tour travels, but they haven't. It's been impressive.
Michael, finally, I think I read where 10,000 fans are being allowed, and that's for now. I mean, we're hearing completely different stories for baseball. The Rangers announced 100% capacity. The Cowboys, the fall should look pretty normal. But what does this weekend look like, and what does the rest of the golf schedule look like from a fan standpoint?
So last week, there was supposedly 5,000 fans at Bay Hill. every player that played that week that I've spoken to and every person that was at that tournament said there was way more than 5,000. 10,000 is the number that they're throwing around out here, but what the tour is saying and what TBC Sawgrass is saying is they're expected to be at about 20 to 25% capacity. That's fantastic, but nobody knows what the number is of what full capacity really is. So 10,000 is the number that you're hearing, but I'll tell you this. If the big names are playing great golf and the weather is as forecast, which looks perfect, up in about the low 70s without a chance of rain whatsoever, I would expect to see pretty good sized crowds. Of course, it's not going to be 100%. Every hole is not going to be packed, but you're going to see even bigger size crowds than we saw at Arnold Palmer. And that's a good thing. Every golfer that I talk to says how much they missed having the fans and having those cheers and roars. And they didn't know how much they missed them until they got a little taste of them last week at Arnold Palmer.
Michael Collins from the Players. And more than anything, it just means that winter is about over when we're seeing Michael Collins on our television screen. Michael, so great to see you, and can't wait to see you soon.
Thanks, man. And hey, America's Caddy is on ESPN2 tonight. They put my ESPN Plus show on TV. Don't tell nobody, but watch, it's at 7 o'clock.
What time is that on? 7, okay.
7 o'clock
I
on
thought
ESPN2.
I saw it on the listen, I've always been impressed with the programmers at ESPN, and now I'm even more impressed that they finally got it right. So 7 o'clock tonight, make sure you watch, and your life will never be the same again.
I promise it won't.
the one and only Michael Collins joining us from Ponte Vedra. We were heading to the break here. More of your phone calls, more guests, including the latest on Les Miles and Jeff Long, both of them unemployed as of this hour. Man, things change quickly in Lawrence, Kansas. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And fun conversation there with Michael Collins at the Players. And Leonard is up next in Florida. Hello, Leonard.
Hello, Paul. Leonard Thompson here. I was just passing the Players Club.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to congratulate you for being the first journalist that I know of to call this a major championship.
Well, thank you.
This is not a major. There are no majors.
Well, Leonard, for those who don't know, was a longtime touring pro from the University of Florida. What is this tournament like?
Paul, Wake Forest.
Wake Forest. Let me repeat. Leonard, a longtime touring pro from Wake Forest, who lives in Florida. And Leonard, Wake Forest has a pretty strong reputation for golf, with Arnold Palmer being the head. Leonard, what is it like to play in this tournament?
Well, it's pretty difficult. As Michael Collins gave you a great interview, you can't pick a favorite here. This golf course doesn't favor anyone. It's so difficult on every level that you really have to be on top of every part of your game to play well here. It is just, I played in 23 of them, I think, and I don't think I ever played any good. I maybe finished eighth or ninth one year, but this is just a really hard place to play golf. If you get any weather at all, any, I mean, 10 miles an hour of wind here is a disaster for most guys.
And, you know, it's always had that reputation as the fifth major, but in terms of the players love it, do they not? I mean, this is their course.
Absolutely. I mean, this is our tournament. We started this in 1974, and I think it was Atlanta Country Club, and then it was at Colonial one year, and then it was at Inverary one year, and then we came to Ponte Vedra to Sawgrass Country Club for the first 5 years. And we actually had a day at Sawgrass called Black Friday, which is just, the average score was 79.9 for the best 144 players in the world. And it kind of went from there to the current Players Club where it's played now. It's just a really difficult golf course that our guys, I'm not there anymore. I've been retired for 10 years. But these guys are so good. You saw last week how good they are. And this place can bring them right to their knees. If they get any weather at all, it is just almost impossible to play well here.
Leonard, I'm up against the very end of the hour where we'll just get cut off, and I want to thank you again. It's always so cool to catch up with you, and look forward to visiting again very soon. Leonard Thompson, a longtime PGA Touring pro and a really good player as well.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.